You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Welcome to MLB.com Extras, the Los Angeles Dodgers. Hello, everyone. I'm Allison Footer from MLB.com, here with Ken Gernick, who has been covering the very interesting Dodgers all year and through this first part of the offseason. And Ken, I guess let's talk about the managerial situation, which is fluid, we realize. But it, after all of the names that have been out there, it does seem to come down to Gabe Kapler or Dave Roberts as the finalists, with everybody else having been cleared out. So do you have any sort of thoughts on, you know, what kind of qualities each one of these guys fit, what the Dodgers are ultimately looking for?
Well, I think, you know, we can assume that if they both are the finalists, which the Dodgers have not confirmed that, and they've never even confirmed any of the candidates, to be honest about it. So they've tried to keep it quiet. But let's assume that these are the two finalists. You have to assume that they both fit what the Dodgers are looking for. And from an outsider's view, and I consider myself one because they really aren't sharing much information, you have to assume that they are sort of redefining the role of manager to the extent that that a lot of the decisions will be made either with the input of the front office or by the front office. And I don't think that makes the Dodgers that unusual nowadays. I think that line is blurred a lot. You know, it used to be you'd hire a manager and let him run the game and let him manage the clubhouse. And you provide him with the roster and turn them loose. And I think that this front office, and I think a lot of front offices, feel that there ought to be there's a lot more riding on the line that the front office doesn't want to just hand total control over to a manager. So I think what they really want the manager to do is control the personalities, run the clubhouse, and get the players motivated. But a lot of the decisions, at least analytically, can be basically dictated before the game. And I think that's what's happening throughout baseball.
Yeah, it's a really good point. And I was thinking about that when I saw the reports about who are the finalists. Of course, yes, nothing has been confirmed. But it really threw me. I don't know why it's different when I look at the Dodgers than it would be if I'm looking at a team that maybe is a little bit less in the spotlight, like the Braves or the Royals or whoever. But with the Dodgers, it just seems like wow, like their two finalists reportedly are two guys that have no managerial experience in the big league, and for some reason it surprises me because there is so much that goes into being a manager in Los Angeles. And maybe it is just kind of a uniform thing. I mean, you think like how you described it is how we describe a lot of these teams where the front offices are making the decisions. So does the market size really not matter anymore when it comes to being able to have that job?
Well, I guess that's a better question for Andrew Friedman to answer. But, he's not Ned Colletti or Fred Clair or Al Campanis. And he obviously has a different way of putting a team together and how to run it, how to manage it. And I think the fact that if these are the two candidates and neither one has managed in the big leagues, and really Dave Roberts hasn't managed anywhere, and Gabe Kapler has managed 1 year of A-ball, so you're basically taking two inexperienced managers and asking them to manage in the major leagues. And that's the way it looks like it's going to go. So apparently this front office does not feel that managerial experience is important to be a manager. And, maybe if that's the way it turns out, they can explain that, and reconcile that. It's obviously not the traditional way. But, Andrew Friedman has been very successful doing things in unconventional and non-traditional fashion, and it looks like that applies here.
Yeah, it's interesting. Well, let's move on to Cy Young talk. So I have to admit, while the whole time I totally understood the argument for Jake Arrieta, I did not ultimately think that when it came down to it that he was going to win the National League Cy Young Award, regardless of how historic his second half was. But I just kept looking at Greinke's numbers and saying, he did this the entire season. And it turns out that Arrieta did win the Cy Young. So I was a little bit surprised. How did you react to that? Did you feel like, you know, that Greinke should have won it, having been dominant for maybe, you know, over the course of the season, whereas Arrieta not quite as dominant for the 6 months?
Well, you know, I don't feel it's for any single voter to say this is how it should be, but this is how I see it. And so the way I would see it, although I don't have a vote, is the consistency, the consistent excellence that Greinke had, the way I view the Cy Young, he would deserve it. But I think a lot of voters voting for Arrieta felt that that he basically carried his club into the postseason with an absolutely crazy second half, you know, an unprecedented second half. And very often voters will put more weight on what happens late in the season than early in the season. And, you know, you can debate that forever. You know, a win in April and a win in September. Some people feel September's count more, and others feel that a win is a win. So it's clear that the voters here put more weight on late in the season than they did on Greinke's, total body of work over the whole season. And, I just think that's just a personal preference, and more baseball writers who got Cy Young votes felt that the second half counted more than the overall season. So, I don't know that makes it right or wrong. It's just the way they voted.
Yeah, I don't think you could have really gone wrong with any of the top three choices. But it just still, at the end of the day, I was a little bit surprised. And so one final question. We've seen players that are accepting qualifying offers for the first time ever since the qualifying offers have existed, Brett Anderson being one of them, younger than most of the guys who accepted the qualifying offers. But I thought it was pretty poignant of him to say, like, I know where I am, I know who I am, and I know that this is the right decision for me. Because you are kind of swallowing your pride a little bit when you do accept the qualifying offer, because, most guys who don't think that they can get a longer-term deal, more of a commitment for a team. But I kind of liked his attitude, Brett Anderson's attitude toward this whole thing, and that he'll use 16 more as a springboard to continue what he built in 15 and then move on from there.
Right, and I think what a lot of us, don't necessarily have the same perspective that he has, because he knows his body. He knows how hurt he's been in the past. He knows, how some of those injuries came about. In his mind, they were fluky. He doesn't consider himself necessarily injury-prone, and certainly not with the arm and shoulder, and he feels that that this was just kind of a reestablished year, but not the kind of year that you can use to really cash in. And he feels that a second year, either as good or better than what he had this year, will propel him into that multi-year, 3-, 4-, 5-year type of contract. And he said that he had some multi-year offers, but he didn't say how lucrative they were, and you have to assume that they weren't up into the 4-year, $50 million type deal that the Dodgers gave McCarthy after they felt that he had proven that he was healthy. So I think that that Anderson, being 27 and not 31 or 32, feels that it's willing, that he was willing to bet on himself, that he will be able to put another good season together. And he liked the fact that he succeeded in L.A. He didn't want to have to change working with a pitching coach, even though it hasn't been announced that Rick Honeycutt will be back. All signs seem to point that way. And so I think when you look at the total picture and all the factors that he was considering, his situation is unique, and you really shouldn't. I wouldn't associate that with the other two guys who took the qualifying offer. I think this is strictly Anderson's decision based on his specific situation, and as long as he stays healthy next year, it'll be a really good decision.
Yeah, do you think just because of the shortage of available starting pitchers next offseason, I mean, the market is so saturated this year with these fantastic names, with fantastic arms. Next offseason, it's going to be almost barren. So it would be probably better for a Brett Anderson to be out on the market next year, wouldn't you think?
Sure, and he mentioned that too. And that's why I say there really wasn't one factor, but if you were drawing up a list of pros and cons, he gave an awful lot of pros and not too many cons. So you can understand both in the market. There won't be that many available pitchers next year compared to this year. His age, you know, one healthy year will convince some people. Two healthy years will probably convince more. He just, as I said, when you draw up the pros and cons, this decision made sense.
Okay, great stuff. Ken, thanks so much. Catch up with you soon.
Thanks, Allison.
MLB.TV Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.TV Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go. Every night, on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.TV for details.